The blue Nebraska sky stretched above my car like a tight rubber band. The wind held its My Antonia constancy, and the sun beat down. All around, as far as the eye could see, were dusty brown fields of dried soybeans and golden fields of dried corn. There were no trees. Just that huge open expanse of soy and corn crop after soy and corn crop, alternating gold and brown and open to the big blue sky. Tractors glinted in the sunlight like ships at a distance, sailing up and down, methodically cutting ribbons out of a sepia ocean, while dust billowed like a thick and impenetrable storm behind them. Harvest time. The day before, I had landed in Denver, Colorado, in the late afternoon. When I deplaned and exited the airport, standing for a moment on the hot, dry concrete sidewalk outside the baggage claim, my rolly suitcase gripped in my right hand and my black L.L. Bean backpack on my shoulder, I was suddenly and immensely thirsty. I looked up and saw the Rocky Mountains rising, snow-capped and gleaming, before me. They seemed so close. I wondered if I could just reach my arm through that horizontal and relentless sun, if I'd be able to dip my hand into that snow, bring a handful to my mouth, and cool off. As I turned away from the mountains toward the rental car lots, the land before me stretched as flat as paper across the great plains of eastern Colorado and into Nebraska, where I was headed. I had come to Denver to start somewhere, to start telling a story that I'd stumbled upon in that life becomes art and art becomes life kind of way. 2 months earlier, I'd published an article in Elle magazine about a long and tedious illness that had plagued me for nearly 4 years until I met Dr. Paris Mansman, an allergist and immunologist. Mansman is based in the suburban town of Yarmouth, Maine, a short distance outside Portland, our state's biggest city and cultural center, where I lived. Mansman had asserted that, in his opinion, I had developed a sensitivity to the proteins that are created from the DNA inserted into GMO corn to make it herbicide-resistant and also to carry its own pesticide. These genetic aberrances, he posited, had caused my immune system to go haywire. Although his theory seemed unorthodox, perhaps crazy, and it turned out also majorly controversial, I decided to trust in it. I was too desperate not to. I'd been sick for so long during the first year of my marriage and for the entire first 2 years of my son Marsden's life. And by sick, I don't mean that I was just not feeling great or that I was a little queasy. I mean that I was so sick that I was often unable to get out of bed because arthritic pain radiated throughout my body, making my thighs and ankles weak and causing me to hobble around like a 90-year-old. My ankles, I'd joke to Dan, my husband, felt like they'd been Kathy Bates'd, a reference to the movie Misery. I was exhausted, yet my body was in such a state that I felt like I'd been plugged into an electrical outlet and couldn't relax enough to sleep. I had horrible headaches, a constant head cold, tingling and numbness in my feet, legs, and arms, and rashes splattered like pizza sauce across my face. During this time, I had tried every diagnosis or theory that came my way, including hormone treatments, vitamin injections, iodine pills, elimination diets, and a long and debilitating course of powerful antibiotics aimed at curing me of chronic Lyme disease. Everything seemed to make me sicker, not better. I felt like Christina in that famous Andrew Wyeth painting. The world was just out of reach. My life was passing me by while we spent thousands and thousands of dollars we really did not have to consult with anyone who would see me, from Harvard-educated MDs to shamans. All the while, we were just hoping someone would find a key to unlock this puzzle and make me well.